afternoon to one and all, and welcome to another edition of What's Cooking for March 2013, no less. Today we are going to talk about seafood, fish, etc. Yes, I can already hear the groans because I think seafood is something you either love or hate. But whether we love or hate seafood, it's very healthy, it's very nutritious and good as part of a balanced diet. Lots of recipes for seafood, of course, as you might imagine. And there's a lot more choice of seafood in your local supermarket. Of course, if you are lucky enough to have a local fishmonger, you can get it nice and fresh there, and pretty much anything and everything. Some people think that frozen seafood, perhaps the quality isn't the right thing to have in recipes, but let me assure you it is. And it's often quicker to use frozen rather than fresh, but there is a lot more choice of both in supermarkets these days. Apart from plants, the bounties of the sea are most likely among the foods eaten by prehistoric men dwelling along the coast and other bodies of water. Similar to agriculture, fossil evidence shows the harvest, processing, and consumption of seafood as far back as the beginning of the Paleolithic period, about 40,000 years ago. Skeletal remains of the Tianyuan man discovered in eastern Asia near what is now modern-day Beijing, dating back to this period, indicated the regular consumption of freshwater fish with fossil evidence of shells and fish bones. Ancient cave drawings also show how seafood was an important food for survival. The predominant hunting-gathering lifestyle necessitated that men be constantly on the move. Early settlements in the area indicated the likelihood of fishing for food. In another time and place, the Nile River was the source of fish that was consumed as a staple for Egyptians. These were consumed fresh and much was dried. Remains of freshwater fish from the Yarkon and Jordan rivers and the Sea of Galilee have been found in excavations and include St. Peter's fish and mouth breeders. Saltwater fish discovered in excavations include sea bream, grouper, meager, and grey mullet. Most of these come from the Mediterranean, but in the latter Iron Age period, some are from the Red Sea. Fishermen supplied fish to inland communities, as remains of fish, including bones and scales, have been discovered at many inland sites. To preserve them for transport, the fish were first smoked or dried and salted. Merchants shipped fish to Jerusalem, and there was evidently a significant trade in fish. Fishing scenes are rarely represented in ancient Greek culture, a reflection of the low social status of fishing. The consumption of fish varied in accordance with the wealth and location of the household. In the Greek islands and on the coast, fresh fish and seafood, squid, octopus and shellfish were common. They were eaten locally, but more often transported inland. Sardines and anchovies were regular fare for the citizens of Athens. They were sometimes sold fresh, but more frequently salted. Pictorial evidence of Roman fishing comes from mosaics. The Greco-Roman sea god Neptune is depicted as wielding a fishing trident. Fish were served only in earlier periods, and it remained more expensive than simpler meat types. Breeding was attempted in freshwater and saltwater ponds, but some kinds of fish could not be fattened in captivity. Among those that could was the formidable and potentially toxic Mediterranean moray, a valued delicacy which were reared in ponds at the seaside. Morays were also kept as pets and sometimes as a means of punishment. Another farm species was the popular mullus, the goatfish. At a certain time, this fish was considered the epitome of luxury, above all because its scales exhibit a bright red colour when it dies out of water. For this reason, these fish were occasionally allowed to die slowly at the table. In medieval times, seafood was less prestigious than other animal meats, and often seen as merely an alternative to meat on fast days. Still, seafood was the mainstay of many coastal populations. Fish, to the medieval person, was also a general name for anything not considered a proper land-living animal, including marine mammals such as whales and porpoises. Especially important was the fishing and trade in herring and cod in the Atlantic and the Baltic Sea. The herring was of unprecedented significance to the economy of much of Northern Europe, and it was one of the most common commodities traded by the Hanseatic League, a powerful North German alliance of trading guilds. Kippers made from herring, caught in the North Sea, could be found in markets as far away as Constantinople. While large quantities of fish were eaten fresh, a large proportion was salted, dried, and, to a lesser extent, smoked. A wide range of mollusks, including oysters, mussels, and scallops, were eaten by coastal and river-dwelling populations, and freshwater crayfish were seen as a desirable alternative to meat during fish days. Compared to meat, fish was much more expensive for inland populations, especially in Central Europe, and therefore not an option for most. Our first recipe today is for seafood salad. Now, there are lots of recipes for this dish, and I have tried several, which I've thoroughly enjoyed, but not this one. So, let's enjoy together.
Mitch Tonks was an accountant until he discovered the delights of fish, and he's now a fishmonger, restaurateur and self-taught chef. And today we'll rustle up the perfect seafood salad. Mitch, what seafood is included in your salad?
I've got a wonderful mixture of good British seafood, and I've got some squid, I've got some shrimp, so I've got some lovely prawns. I've got some cockles and mussels, all this stuff ready available in your fishmonger. It's a lovely sort of Mediterranean dish. It's something that perhaps we're more familiar with getting seafood salads in this country pickled. But this is just dressed with olive oil and a few herbs. It's absolutely wonderful, great starter.
So what's bubbling away over there?
Well, bubbling over here, I've got a pan of water, just a hot pan with a splash of water in there. And I've got some mussels and clams in there. And what I want to try and do is to steam them open. Because I want to take them from the shells, and I want to make a dressing from the seawater that's in them.
What preparation have you done to those shellfish?
Well, what I did with them is, with the mussels, I just took the beards off, and with the clams, I just gave them a wash under the tap to remove any sand. And so all we're going to do is give those about 2 to 3 minutes just to steam them open, and then we're ready to go.
You don't try and open one that hasn't opened in the hot water, do you?
Absolutely. If you get any mussels or clams that don't open, just ignore them and throw them away. And a good test is give them a tap before you actually throw them in the pan. So if they don't close, then discard them, and if they don't open, discard them. Anyway, there are a couple of minutes in there, and the other seafood I've got is got some lovely these lovely sort of Norwegian prawns that you can get, the shell on prawns. I always think it's better to buy them in the shell rather than buy the peeled ones. The flavour is much better.
Fresh or frozen?
Frozen. You'll find that all the prawns in this country are frozen, and it's a very, very good way of getting them. And all I'm doing is just peeling them, taking the heads off, and taking the shells off. And you want about 40 or 50 prawns, and that's it. You get this lovely perfect tail.
That's a lot of prawns and a lot of time taking the shells off.
It does take a little bit of time, but a glass of wine, you can make it fun. I've also got some squid, lovely fresh squid tubes, very much in season right now. And I'm just cooking them in a little bit of salted water. And I've done that earlier. And then what I do is to just slice the squid up.
Wait a minute, how long do you cook squid for?
The squid just needs to be poached probably for about 4 to 5 minutes, just until the opaque flesh goes a lovely kind of spearmint white. And that's it, ready to go. I've also got some brown shrimps. I'm quite familiar with brown shrimps in this country from Morecambe. Beautiful things, and add these as well. So anyway, once the mussels and clams are open...
Hang on, the brown shrimps... Have they still got their skins on?
No, I've taken the skins off of them.
Well, all that must have taken you a long time.
Yes, it's all a bit fiddly, but it's all worth it in the end.
How good is seafood from the supermarket?
Well, look, the supermarkets are doing a much better job these days of supplying the seafood. The fish counters, the chilled counters, certainly, have come on a long way. And sadly, fishmongers are in demise, and so we don't have as many on the high street. But I would advocate, you know, going to the supermarket, you get some perfectly good fish. And also, don't be frightened of frozen fish. Frozen fish is very good, and often it's sustainably sourced, so it's very good indeed.
How's that bubbling going?
Okay, so we're bubbling away, and the clams are open, and...
See, they're hot. And mind your fingers.
They're okay. You can just pick them up. And what I'm going to do is to just take the mussels and clams from there. And then I'm just draining off some of the juice into a bowl. And that's lovely salty seawater. And then I'm going to add some really good olive oil. Now, olive oil is a very, very important ingredient in this dish. You want a really nice sort of peppery Tuscan oil, extra virgin. And so that's going into a bowl. And then I'm squeezing in the juice of half a lemon. Now, a little bit of salt in here is always very good. I think olive oil, like any other ingredient, needs seasoning. And then what you do is you take your prawns and your squid and your mussels and your shrimps. And then what you do is you just give it a good stir so you get that lovely olive oil.
But would you actually serve it warm?
You can serve this warm at room temperature. I think seafood straight from the fridge loses a bit of flavour, and so at room temperature is the way to do it. But the mussels and clams and the squid in there, lovely and warm, is very good. I mean, remember, the seafood is a lot of it shellfish, and it's very, very rich. So you don't want huge amounts. You just want a nice bit of crusty bread and a beautiful plate of it, and you're away. And I like to serve it up in the middle of the table so that it just becomes a centrepiece, and everybody just digs in, which is really lovely. So I've got a nice old vintage plate.
Very nice plate.
Yeah, I like plates, you see, like that. It just adds to it, doesn't it? A bit of framing. There we go. From scratch.
How long would this actually take?
I think this is probably about no longer than 30 minutes.
Oh, come on. Peeling all those prawns?
Well, peeling the shrimps might be in the prawns, but you can use... I advocate using shell-on ones that you peel. But you can use peeled prawns. It would make it much easier. So if you think about it, you've just got to steam your mussels and your clams open, let them cool, take them from the shell, poach your squid and slice it, throw it together with your prawns and your shrimps, your olive oil and your lemon, a little bit of parsley over the top, and away you go.
And you said to serve it with some nice, fresh, crusty bread. What about a green salad as well?
A green salad would be perfect. Some lovely leaves just tossed with a little bit of olive oil, some salt and some lemon, and then you can toss the lot together. In fact, I've got some rocket here, and quite often we'll sprinkle it with green or purple rocket when it's in season, and then you can scoop the whole lot off together. So you've got that lovely peppery rocket, beautifully sweet seafood, and of course all that olive oil. And
what do you do about the one guest who's allergic to prawns?
Well, give him something else, and that's it. But yeah, it's a lovely simple dish, and very Mediterranean. And
just pass it over, because I am not allergic to prawns. In fact, they're my favourite food, so I will have a taste of one of these whilst you explain how you make sure that the fish you buy is from a sustainable source.
Okay, well, first of all, you can start looking for MSC accredited fish. I think if you go to your supermarket and you see the MSC logo, you can be assured that it's coming from there, from a sustainable source. Also, our local fisheries are, you know, all around the South Coast are extremely well managed. So, you know, we do have an issue with our fisheries, but they're getting better, and it's progressive. And also cod. A lot of people worried about cod, but, you know, MSC fisheries from Norway and those sorts of places, is tons and tons and tons of it coming in and perfectly safe for us to eat.
And the seafood salad is very sharp, very fresh, very
and
good
enjoyed.
For a summer's day.
Well, I hope you'll try it, because give it a go.
Tonks, thank you very much indeed for being with us.
You're welcome. You're listening to
to the Como Voice.
Next up, we have a recipe for tiger prawn jambalaya. Mmm, delicious. And again, I haven't tried this one because I have no one to share it with me. Sob, sob. This is one of the easiest and nicest rice dishes, and its origins are in the traditional Cajun cooking of America. It's very easy to adapt it to whatever you have handy. Fish, chicken, or even pork. I prefer the fish. For this recipe, you will need a 10-inch, that's 25.5 cm frying pan with a lid. You will also need 8 raw tiger prawns, shell on, fresh or frozen, or you could use cooked Mediterranean prawns in their shells. 4 ounces or 110 grams chorizo sausage, peeled and cut into 3 to 4 inch, that's 2 cm pieces. 1 to 2 tablespoons olive oil. 1 medium onion, peeled and cut into 1 to 2 inch, that's 1 cm slices. 2 cloves garlic, peeled and crushed. 2 sticks celery, trimmed and sliced into 1 to 2 inch, that's 1 cm pieces on the diagonal. 1 green chili, deseeded and finely chopped. 1 yellow pepper, deseeded and cut into 1 to 2 inch, that's 1 cm slices. 6 fluid ounces, that's 175 ml white basmati rice. 1 tablespoon Tabasco sauce. 3 medium tomatoes dropped into boiling water for 1 minute, then peeled and chopped. 1 bay leaf. 1 tablespoon roughly chopped flat leaf parsley to garnish. 2 spring onions, trimmed and finely sliced to garnish. Salt and freshly milled black pepper. And
this is what you do.
Begin by bringing a pan with 1 pint, that's 570 ml, of water to simmering point. If using raw prawns, drop them into the water for 3 minutes, then remove them with a draining spoon, reserving the cooking liquid. Of course, remember that cooked prawns will not need this pre-cooking. Now set aside 2 whole prawns and shell the rest. To do this, just remove the heads by giving them a sharp tug, then simply peel off the rest, which comes away very easily. But leave the tails intact, as this makes them look nicer. Now remove the black vein from the back of each prawn, which will come away easily using the point of a sharp knife. Next, place the shells in the pan of water and simmer for 30 minutes without a lid to make a nice prawn-flavoured stock. Then drain and discard the shells. Pour the hot stock into a jug and cover with a plate to keep warm. Now heat the frying pan over a high heat and brown the pieces of chorizo sausage without adding any fat. Then remove them from the pan to a plate and set aside. Then add a tablespoon of the oil and, when it's hot, fry the onions for 2 to 3 minutes to brown them a little at the edges. Then return the chorizo to the pan and add the garlic, celery, chili and sliced pepper. Continue to fry for 4 to 5 minutes till the celery and pepper are also softened and lightly tinged brown at the edges, adding a little more oil if you need to. Now stir in the rice to get a good coating of oil, then measure out 12 fluid ounces, that's 340 mils, of the reserved stock and add the Tabasco to it. Next, add the chopped tomatoes and bay leaf to the pan. Then pour in the stock. Season with salt and freshly milled black pepper. Give it all one stir and push the rice down into the liquid. Now turn the heat to low, put a lid on and let it barely simmer for 20 minutes. Then check the rice is cooked and return the shelled and the two reserved shell-on prawns to the pan, adding a little more stock if necessary. Cover with a lid for 5 more minutes. Then serve garnished with the chopped parsley and spring onions. Ah, fish, chips and mushy peas. There is nothing more British than fish and chips. Freshly cooked, piping hot, fish and chips, smothered in salt and soused with vinegar. Wrapped in newspaper and eaten outdoors on a cold and wintry day. It simply cannot be beaten. I'll agree with that. So, how, when and where did this quintessentially British dish come about? The potato is thought to have been brought to England from the New World in the 17th century by Sir Walter Raleigh, although it is believed that the French invented the fried potato chip. Both Lancashire and London stake a claim to being the first to invent this famous meal. Chips were a cheap staple food of the industrial north, whilst fried fish was introduced in London's East End. In 1839, Charles Dickens referred to a fried fish warehouse in his novel Oliver Twist. The populace soon decided that putting fried fish and chips together was a very tasty combination, and so was born our national dish of fish and chips. The first fish and chip shop in the north of England is thought to have opened in Mossley, near Oldham, Lancashire, around 1863. Mr. Lees sold fish and chips from a wooden hut in the market, and later he transferred the business to a permanent shop across the road, which had the following inscription in the window: "This is the first fish and chip shop in the world." However, in London, it is said that Joseph Mallin opened a fish and chip shop in Cleveland Street within the sound of Bow Bells in 1860. Fish and chip shops were originally small family businesses, often run from the front room of the house, and were commonplace by the late 19th century. Through the latter part of the 19th century and well into the 20th century, the fish and chip trade expanded greatly to satisfy the needs of the growing industrial population of Great Britain. In fact, you might say that the Industrial Revolution was fueled partly by fish and chips. The development of the steam trawler brought fish from all over the North Atlantic, Iceland and Greenland, and the steam railways allowed easy and fast distribution of the fish around the country. Fish and chips became so essential to the diet of the ordinary man and woman that one shop in Bradford had to employ a doorman to control the queue at busy times during 1931. The Territorial Army prepared for battle on fish and chips, provided in special catering tents erected at training camps in the 1930s. The fish and chip shop was invaluable in supplementing the family's weekly diet in the Second World War, as fish and chips were among the few foods not to be rationed. Queues were often hours long, when the word went round that the chip shop had fish. On one occasion, at Brian's Fish and Chip Shop in Leeds, when fish was scarce, homemade fish cakes were sold, along with the confusing and slightly worrying warning: patrons, we do not recommend the use of vinegar with these fish cakes. I wonder why. So are fish and chips any good for us, nutritionally? Fish and chips are a valuable source of protein, fibre, iron and vitamins, providing a third of the recommended daily allowance of vitamins for men and nearly half for women. Magnus Pike, the famous scientist, cites it as an example of a traditional dish once jeered at by food snobs and even censored by health food devotees, but now fully appreciated as a nutritious combination. In 1999, the British consumed nearly 300 million servings of fish and chips. That equates to 6 servings for every man, woman and child in the country. There are now around 8,500 fish and chip shops across the UK. That's 8 for every 1 McDonald's outlet, making British fish and chips the nation's favourite takeaway. You will probably remember, back at that little bit of interesting history, that I mentioned something called mushy peas. What are mushy peas? Well, you tell me. Let's have another little What's Cooking challenge, as I like to do from time to time. What are mushy peas? If you don't know, find out. And there are plenty of ways to find out. I know the information is out there. I've seen it for myself. But what are mushy peas? If you'd like to contact the programme, you can do so in the usual way by emailing cookin@theglobalvoice.info. That's cookin at theglobalvoice.info. Maybe you have a recipe that you would like to share, some ideas for what you'd like to hear on future shows, any feedback, queries, anything you like. And recipes don't have to be anything substantial. It could just be your favourite sandwich, your favourite cup of coffee in the morning. Just tell us what you like, what your favourite food is, why you like it, anything like that. I would love to hear from you. And that's also where to send your answers for our little challenge. Remember, what are mushy peas? Don't be shy, do get in touch. To download or to listen to this programme again, go to theglobalvoice.info/gallery. Or you can visit incx.org, where you can subscribe to the What's Cooking podcast. Well, I'm afraid that's all we have time for today. So until I'm with you next time, this is Sue Hadfield saying, look after yourselves and each other. And as always, happy cooking.